This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
Myself will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show trainers listen to. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in the saddle with you for the next hour, all across North America, on Sirius 219, XM 201, and streaming live or podcast on our HRRN website at horseracingradio.net. Well, today's guest was born and raised in the Derby City, Louisville, Kentucky. And at age 36, he is the youngest of six children. That's right, I said six children. He began training in 2013, saddling 80 winners to date. Nine of those, 11% of his total wins, coming in the first half of 2021, which puts him on pace to reach a brand new single-season record for wins in his very young career. Today, he reaches yet another milestone as he makes his Trainer Talk debut right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Please join me in welcoming trainer Phil Bauer to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Phil, welcome.
Mike, thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Yeah, appreciate it, and thanks for taking the time. Let's start with this. Five siblings in your immediate family. That's an old-school Catholic upbringing, isn't it?
Yes, sir, yes. Four older sisters and one older brother puts me at the bottom of six, and my dad was the oldest of eight in his family, and my mom was the middle child of five. So family gatherings tend to get pretty swollen in whatever building we're in, but certainly always a lot of fun when we can.
I always tell the story, I'm one of three, and I'm the oldest, and I always tell the story that, you know, when I was born, I had to do everything by the book. I was sent to Catholic school all the way through high school. When my sister came along, she made it through middle school, and then when my brother came along, it was all public school, and they said, hey, go play in traffic, do what you want, as the youngest. So for you, as the youngest, what was the experience like?
You know, sometimes I had five mothers, but like you, I was Catholic school through 12th grade, and maybe the siblings paved the way similar to you as far as extracurricular activities and stuff. The rules seemed to loosen up a little bit as my parents got a little older, but certainly had a very blessed childhood and very fortunate to be where I am at today.
Any other family members involved in racing?
My grandfather is kind of the reason why I fell in love with it. He bred and raced some lower end horses at River Downs and Turfway and some other small tracks there, and had a farm out in Peewee Valley, Kentucky that they brought some of the retired mares home and bred them out and stuff. So he kind of started the way, and then a couple of my uncles will dabble in some partnerships and whatnot. And other than that, nobody else has really followed in the footsteps.
Wow, that's amazing. What do they think of you being a horse trainer and doing this for a living?
You know, I think they realize it's a dream come true for me. You know, growing up as a kid, everyone asks, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I always said I wanted to be a horse trainer, and how I was going to do it, I didn't know, and certainly didn't jump right into it, but was fortunate enough to actually get a trainer's license and be a horse trainer. So I guess you could say I'm living a dream, and and although some days are harder than others in this game, it's still a dream come true.
Why a horse trainer, Phil? Why not doing something in the front office of a racetrack, or something more in line with what would be considered a regular profession, if you will, a 9-to-5 type of job? Why train horses for a living?
It's got to be the love of it. Certainly, I tell people that aren't familiar with the horse racing game that it's not a job, it's a lifestyle, and it's very different than anything you grow up with. 9-to-5 is our busiest times of the weekend, sometimes in holidays, because that's when majority of the races occur. But it's definitely the love of it, and the horses, they just seem to take you to a happy place when you're around them. And I can't imagine doing anything else and being as happy as I am. Certainly, I had some other jobs when I was younger that were just jobs. So this is definitely a true love.
You now have, what, 3 kids of your own? Is that right?
Yep. We got my wife Ashley and I have a 7, 6, and 4-year-old. Our oldest will be 8 on Halloween, so we're in the thick of it, and very blessed with health and sometimes obedience, but that's how kids go. But mom gets most of the credit for that, because she takes on the brunt of everything year round when I have to travel and stuff like that. Once the kids started school, it was decided to keep them in one place. So fortunate, Mr. Rigney and Tammy, they have a strong belief in family. So some trips home are not only allowed but expected for me, and it's good to have that possibility.
Yeah, and referring to Richard and Tammy Rigney, Rigney Racing, you, of course, Phil, are the private trainer for them. We're going to spend plenty of time talking about Richard and Tammy and that relationship as we move throughout the show. But you mentioned the fact that, your job is a job that takes you away from the family so often, because you have to travel a little bit. Your big days are on the weekends. So as the kids get older and get into more activities, there's going to be things that you're going to miss. It's inevitable with being a horse trainer. How do you find that balance? How are you able to do that?
Kind of goes back to Ashley. She's kind of holds it together. I was fortunate enough to help coach my oldest and middle child's basketball and coach pitch leagues this year, and that was a lot of fun, because like you said, you do miss a lot of the winter sports and stuff. You miss just because you're not there. But the summer, we're lucky enough to stable at Churchill majority of the spring and summer, so I jumped at the opportunity when the availability was there for some assistant coaching. And I think it's important for me to do that, the fact that I am so vacant at times. But modern technology helps with FaceTime and stuff like that, so certainly maybe a little more contact than guys that came before me, but it's tough. But I think we knew what we signed up for when we started a family, and it's all a kind of take it in stride type deal.
What's a bigger challenge, training a young racehorse or keeping 3 young children in line?
Well, I'd say majority of the time the children, but you'll get your bad actor every now and then with the babies. But that kind of goes to who breaks them for us, and certainly I've had the fortune of getting horses kind of straightforward, and all I got to do is create a training regimen for them, and they just bounce along usually. So we haven't had a terrible one yet, but I'm sure it'll happen eventually.
talking with trainer Phil Bauer here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. If you are just joining us, Phil began training horses on his own in 2013. To date, he has saddled 80 winners, 9 of those already coming in the first half of 2021. So it's been a fantastic year, and we will continue to talk about the recent developments in the career of Phil Bauer. But Phil, I want to go back to your grandfather for a minute. You mentioned that he bred and raced horses, and he's really the reason that you became interested in horse racing in the first place. Do you remember being around the horses with him? Is that how it all started?
Certainly. They had a swimming pool at the farm, so as kids we would always go out there during the summer, and when we weren't swimming, we'd run back to the barn. And the big thing when we were kids is when they kind of fed them or had the afternoon, evening turnout, that we were allowed to lead some to and from the barn, and just loved being around horses. And then when they ran, I would attend some of the races with them, and it went back to the barn and got to see how that all works. So it was kind of love at first sight type deal that my mom informed me as I got older that my name in Greek means lover of horses. So I thought, well, that was fitting, if I'm sure I don't know if they would have intended me to join the industry, but I guess the name matches.
My grandparents were not involved in racing in any way. None of my family was. As a matter of fact, I'm the only one. But when I would go visit them as a kid, we would go for walks around the neighborhood, and there was a small farm not too far from their house where there was a chestnut horse that would come over to the fence, and we would feed that horse peppermints. And I was very, very young, but I'll never forget that horse's name. His name was Toby, and we would continue to walk by there every time we'd go visit them, and it was really a highlight. And I think that had a lot to do with my early interest in horses too. Do you remember some of your grandfather's top horses, or is there a horse or two that sticks out to you from your childhood?
He had an older mare that most of his horses didn't account to much on the racetrack, but she was one of their brood mares, and her name was Icy Rainbows. And we actually, my brother and I, were helped name one of her foals, and his name was Chief Rainbow. And so you think back and you're like, well, that was kind of original, but he was by Chief Honcho, I believe. But another one that they had, I think they're one of their better horses, was a filly named Diffidot that my grandmother actually went with my uncle to couldn't remember what horse sale it was, but basically just picked her out in the back ring because she was, I think to quote her, was she was spunky, and she turned out to be a pretty nice horse that they sold. And I want to say Mike Bell ended up training her at the end of her career, but she was, I think she placed in the Humanity Staff at Churchill, and it was one of those things that those stories usually don't work when you pick a horse blindly, but this one did for him. And I don't think it ate my grandfather up, but it was almost comical that, she goes to a sale and picks out one, and it pretty much ended up being their best.
Yeah,
they also had a nice
story.
Indiana bred that they fold out theirself, that named My Sweet Shug. And, that Indiana program we've had some success in ourselves, so it was nice to kind of not necessarily follow in their footsteps, but experience some of the same success. And, it brought back some memories, so that was fun.
Yeah. Is your grandfather still living?
No, he's been gone for a few years now, but he certainly made his mark while he was here.
I wonder what he would say if he could see what you were doing for a living now and seeing how well you're doing.
I'd hope he'd be proud. I mean, he had a lot of grandchildren that every one of us knew that they loved us, and we were frequently over at their farm and stuff, so we all had good relationships with them, and actually worked summers at his place of business selling semi-truck parts. So he was pretty influential in my life, in more ways than just horses.
So how did you come to start working with horses? You didn't just show up at the track and say, hey, give me a job, did you?
Sort of. I decided that I was going to join the family business selling semi-truck parts, and about a couple years in, they were presented an opportunity to sell, and I didn't want to work for the company that bought them, so on a random encounter at Churchill Downs on Mother's Day, I bumped into Richard Klein, and my sister had been a nanny for him when his kids were younger, and I said, hey, I'm kind of looking for a job. How about you help me out get a job on the backside? And that time he had horses with Steve Margolis. And sure enough, he hooked me up with Steve, and my first job back there was walking hots for Steve Margolis. And now a lot of times we'll call each other, and if we need help with company breezing or anything like that, a lot of time it's Steve's horses. So it's funny how everything kind of comes full circle. Or just I think a lot of my career has been in the right place at the right time. And, you know, you think back to that elevator ride, just the doors open and he was in there. Certainly, I don't know if it's fate, but it certainly worked out.
Yeah, timing is everything. And there's that saying that says you'd rather be lucky than good. And you were certainly lucky being there in the right place at the right time. And Steve Margolis, he's been on this program before, and he's somebody that I got to know when I was working at Keeneland, you know, gosh, 15 years ago, 20 years ago now. And, you know, what a great guy to learn from in Steve Margolis.
Yeah, he's what's nice about Steve is his kind of, well, there's no secrets. I mean, he's going to give you his opinion, and he'll help you when he can. So just nice to have some good friends back there on the backside that'll support you, congratulate you every time you win. And, you know, he's usually one of the first texts I get.
You mentioned that when you first went to work for him, you started, as so many people do, you started walking hots and doing that around the barn. How long did it take you to get comfortable in that role, or were you already pretty handy around horses at that point?
You know, there was a mild learning curve. That's, you know, you're used to horses on a farm, and their heads are dropped, and you're just leading them around with a pony snap. But, you know, the racetrack is a different environment, and certainly different stage of horse being athletes that are just ready to rock and roll. So it didn't take long to realize that it was, you know, you had to pay attention and couldn't just lead them around in a circle. There was more to it.
What things did Steve do well that you kind of took from watching him that you still use today?
You know, I think from what I gathered in the short time I worked for him is that he's a pretty good judge of talent. And, you know, sometimes owners don't want to hear it, judging from conversations with some trainers and stuff, that their horses are not what we had hoped they'd be. But, and Steve always seemed to kind of judge a horse's talent level fairly quickly, and that I think that helped with his success. You know, you put him in the right spot, you're more likely to win.
What was the next step after working with Steve? Where'd you go?
My uncle that was involved in the horse industry was working for Kenny McPeak in his office on his farm, and that's when I began my stint with him. They were looking for help at Saratoga, as everyone always is, and I drove up there blindly and started to work as a groom there. And when the Saratoga meet was over, I went back to Churchill and was kind of placed into more of a foreman role with just a little more responsibility that I was able to kind of prove myself as wanting to do more and willing to kind of make some sacrifices and stuff like that. So I think anybody that does that, just from the people that kind of were underneath me as assistant with Kenny, that you can see quickly that they'll be able to make it because they're willing to sacrifice, willing to work, and not ask why. And you know, this industry, like you said, isn't 9 to 5. So you're working long hours or weird hours, and sometimes you're asked to do things that necessarily isn't in your job description, but you know, it needs to get done. So I think people that are willing to do that have a chance to succeed or elevate in responsibility roles within a barn.
That's interesting. I've never heard a trainer say that to me, that there are times when you have to do some things that aren't necessarily in your job description. Give me an example of that, Phil, for people that are listening and don't understand what a barn foreman is or how this progression works quite typically with trainers. Give me an example of something that you may have had to do that wasn't necessarily your responsibility.
Well, when I was with Kenny, one of the big things was driving the box van after your morning work to and from the farm, you know, rotating horses out that needed a break, bringing them in, making runs on races and stuff like that. So, you know, there was a lot of times that you'd work all morning and then hop in that truck and make some rotations. And I remember a couple times up at Turfway, I mean, they run nights, so you're driving up there and you're waiting, you're in the last race. You're running the horse and loading it up and bringing it back. And, you know, it all was worth it at the end of the day, but certainly when you were doing it, it wasn't your favorite thing to do.
Yeah, and then you're up early the next morning too, right?
Right, yeah. No days off usually.
Kenny McPeak is somebody that's in the spotlight quite often because he has so many really good horses and he does such a great job with his stable. But one thing that I think gets overlooked with any trainer and the people that are coming up underneath them and work with them is the type of teacher that they are, because they're teaching even though they're running their business over here on the other side of things. So what kind of teacher was Ken McPeak?
Kenny was a teacher that kind of allowed you to learn through responsibility. So, you know, his big thing was to take the role, and if I think one of his words was delegate, and to take what you're doing and learn from. So a lot of the times, you know, I was at Churchill, he was in Lexington. It was, you know, let's talk about it, but let's do what you think is best. And I think that was helpful, that sometimes when people hold your hand, you don't learn as well or as quickly because you're dependent. And with him, he gave not necessarily a lot of free rein, but put a lot of trust in your role as assistant. And it, I think it helps you in the long run.
Yeah, I think so too. And you also get to learn from your mistakes, because I'm sure that when you're being delegated a task, there are going to be certain things that you're not going to do exactly right on the first try. But every one of those is a learning experience, right?
Right. I mean, if you can't better yourself from a mistake, then it's you're in a wrong a bad cycle. So certainly that was part of it. You know, if you did something wrong, he told you did wrong, and you bettered yourself. And I think there was a majority of the time understanding that sometimes you were still learning, and it was good for me.
talking with trainer Phil Bauer here on Trainer Talk presented by Fezzik Tipton. Tell me about some of the big name horses you had a chance to be around when you were working with Kenny.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
Tell me about some of the top horses that you had the chance to be around as you were working with Kenny.
You know, that's the one thing you mentioned about Kenny. He always has good horses, and a lot of it is his ability to purchase those young horses that end up to be pretty good. And, you know, I think back probably one of the best horses I was around with him was a horse named Noble's Promise. He was fifth in the Derby. Outran his pedigree, ended up winning some minor stakes and whatnot, and placed in a bunch of others, but was just quote unquote racehorse. I mean, he always ran his race, and he actually ended up being a horse that Richard owned outright at the end of his career, and we were able to stand him in Indiana and had a big part in him being a Stallion of the Year over there. So that was fun to see him from two all the way up till we lost him, and see him kind of throw his heart, I guess you can say, to some of his offspring and watch him run.
Is that difficult when you have a horse that you're so fond of? And I know you're fond of so many of the horses you work with, but a horse like that that really grabs you and they turn out to be really good and they go on to do great things, when you finally have to show up at the barn the next day and they're not there, is that difficult for a trainer?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's some of the hardest things is that when you got a horse in top form and he's running well and you come in there and he's blown a suspensory or something, and there's really no other fact that his training or his racing career is over. It's so immediate, and then they leave the barn. There's definitely a void there for a while, and you know, you're with them so much, and they give so much that you just appreciate the heck out of them. You know, they're the pleasure of having them there, and then all of a sudden they're not. Definitely a void.
And talking with trainer Phil Bauer here on Trainer Talk presented by Fezzik Tipton. We're going to step away for a short break. When I come back, we'll talk about his relationship with the Rigneys. That's Richard and Tammy and their Rigney Racing. And we'll talk more about some of the other horses he's had the privilege to train for them and some of the top moments in his training career. This is Trainer Talk presented by Fezzik Tipton. Fezzik Tipton is offering buyers a bonanza of sales this July. First, on Monday, July 12th, Fezzik Tipton will kick things off with a catalog of July breeding stock featuring the Far From Over Fountain of Youth Dispersal, followed next by the popular July Selected Horses of Racing Age sale, a sale that has produced the earners of more than $51 million since first being held in 2013. Then, on Tuesday, July 13th, it's the July sale of Selected Yearlings, featuring the return of the Freshman Sire Showcase. 348 yearlings selected on pedigree and confirmation by Fezzik Tipton's renowned inspection team, with recent Grade 1 winning graduates like Bell's the One, Kamari, and Speech you need to buy in July. July breeding stock and selected horses of racing age, and the July sale of selected yearlings. July 12th and 13th in Lexington, Kentucky at Fezzik Tipton. Where will you be?
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fezzik Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And Channel Marker moves up on the outside, now takes third from Bellerman within four lengths of the lead. Ageless is next, and the others having work to do and being pulled up. Here is Helwan. Helwan has been pulled up at the back of the pack after a 45 1/2. They're into the stretch. Something Extra, Power Alert on the inside. Here's Channel Marker confronting them, and Ageless on the far outside into the final 16th. Channel Marker, Something Extra. These two coming down to the line together. Power Alert is third. It's going to be Channel Marker and Cisco Torres to do it. Over Something Extra, then came Ageless and Power Alert.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, continuing my visit with trainer Phil Bauer. That was Larry Colmus with the call of the Grade 3 Jiper Invitational at Belmont Park back in 2015. And what a moment it was for my special guest today, as that was his very first Graded Stakes victory after going out on his own in 2013, and it was very special. I'm going to tell you more about that right after I remind you that if you missed any portion of my visit with Phil Bauer, all you have to do is go to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our programs. They're all there for you to listen to at your leisure, every single one since our very first Trainer Talk years ago. They're all there for you. Head back and binge on Trainer Talk, if you will, and spend the day tuning in, because there have been some amazing visits, and this is one of them too. Phil Bauer here on Trainer Talk. Phil, that moment, Channel Marker crossing the finish line first in the Jiper, had to be just so emotional and so special for you.
Yeah, definitely put a smile on my face hearing that race call. But you know, it's this game's funny because I don't think we had won a race that year. And if we did, it was only one until he won that stake. And it was one of those years that seconds were starting to feel like thirds and fourths just because he just couldn't get there. And, you know, he had a really good second at Keeneland in April. And then we ran him back on Derby Day. And he was a footy type horse. And the ground that day at Churchill was just so rock hard. You could tell it took him a while to get comfortable, and came out of the race really well and had a tremendous breeze right before we shipped up. So as confident as you could be running a horse, I think we were. And, you know, he put things together that day. That was definitely a special moment.
You're a guy that when you listen to you talk, you sound like you're very reserved, very laid back. I can imagine when he's storming down the stretch that wasn't your demeanor that day at Belmont Park.
No, there was definitely some hooping and hollering. One of my good friends, he made the trip up with me because Ashley had stay home with our newborn, and I think I picked him up and spun him in a circle. I mean, it was a little embarrassing, but certainly, you know, just a burst of emotions that this, you know, we had kind of topped that mountain as far as a graded stake, and, you know, a former claim that gave a little time off too, and he came back like you'd hope one would. So, you know, it was one of the best moments of my career so far. And hopefully, you know, we'll have a lot of those to come.
You've also been known to celebrate by pouring a shot of Fireball after a big win. Was there some Fireball flowing that night?
I think that time the tradition was a tequila shot. The Fireball started here just a couple years ago when Richard started flavoring the product. But no, we were, I think, the third or fourth race that day, and American Pharoah ended up winning the Triple Crown later on. So it was, needless to say, a celebration for quite a while, and maybe some memories got a little fuzzy towards the end of the day, but it was one to remember.
Yeah, rightfully so. They should. And my man, Cisco Torres, was in the irons for you that day, too. That's really cool.
Yeah, you know, Cisco rode a lot for us back back when he was riding, and he knew the horse well, so he said, let's go up to New York, and didn't want to change gears, especially with where we thought we were heading with him, and it was a lot of fun.
And to do it for the Rigneys, and we touched on Richard and Tammy in the first half of the program, to do it for somebody who had believed in you from the very beginning, how special was that?
Oh, extremely. The unfortunate thing is that our two great at stake wins, Richard and Tammy, have been out of the country, and he was actually catching a, I think it was a sailfish. If you ever meet him, he'll tell you the story and show you the picture. But it was, I think he caught it right after the race. But certainly with somebody that gives you opportunity and believes in you, you know, he's a lot like a father figure as far as that goes. And you know, he says, sometimes I worry more about you, Phil, than how we run. But it's definitely a great relationship we have, and certainly I feel like, you know, we have a whole lot more to accomplish for him to ever add up to what he's done for me. So it's it was nice to kind of get that win, and certainly we had the impression after that maybe we were on our way a little quicker than we thought. Kind of had to go through some ups and downs, just like you do in this industry. But you know, I think our horses in the barn now are headed for big things.
Well, it's not quite Shug McGahee and the Phipps quite yet, but someday we could be talking about that relationship with Phil Bauer and the Rigneys in that same light. You never know. You don't know where the journey's going to go. How did the journey begin? Tell me about that relationship and how it all started.
You know, I think a lot of it goes back to being in the right place at the right time. To touch on Noble's promise again, he was left at Churchill during the summer, as opposed to going to New York towards the latter part of his career to run in some local stakes. And so I developed a relationship with Richard over the phone with that horse. And, you know, he come to visit him at the barn, and got to the point a couple months later, you know, he thought, hey, you know, I'm thinking about maybe doing my own thing, so what would you think about training my horses? You know, I told him I'd jump at the chance, but I didn't know if I was ready to open a public stable. And he said, well, what about a private offer? And I said, I'm ready today. And, you know, the rest is history, I guess you can say. We've been together since 2013, we actually claimed our first horse and ran her as our first starter and won at Churchill. So it was that was a lot of fun to kick things off that way. And you know, I always tell them, I say, you deserve a lot more for a guy. You know, some people will ask for results without investing a whole lot or you know, asking for you to exceed expectations of certain situations. But Richard, you know, he's game, and he swings at it, and he constantly invests in young horses. So you have to think he's due for the type of success he deserves, and we certainly are hopeful, and we feel that things are marching in that direction with the athletes that are showing up.
How did Richard initially get involved in thoroughbred racing? Do you know, Phil?
He fell in love with it at Santa Anita. I mean, he said he would go to the races out there when he lived out there, and then when he moved here, I think he got in it, and Tammy actually bought him a share of Dream Empress, and he was in a syndicate there for a while with Kenny before he started doing his own thing.
Well, pretty amazing stuff. You mentioned the fact that you told him you weren't ready to open a public stable. He said, well, how about a private offer? And that's the way it's been ever since. It's for people that are listening and they don't know the difference between a public trainer and a private trainer, just explain that and explain some of the unique elements of it and maybe even challenges that presents.
So, you know, the biggest difference is you're a business owner as opposed to, I guess you could say, an employee. So you don't stress for new clients and horses. Richard and I are essentially a partnership, and you know, he's committed to me as I am him, and he's constantly bringing in new stock, and I'm trying to produce results for him, and it's extremely lucky on situation for me that he is as understanding and supportive and as he is, that, you know, you put all your eggs in one basket, there's no worry on my end that he's gonna just leave me hanging. So it's very I might have lost a word for it, but no, they're extremely great people, and hopefully get the results that they deserve sooner than later.
Could you make the case, Phil, that yes, you don't have to worry about trying to find new clients every day, but maybe there's a different type of pressure or more pressure, maybe even just something that you put on yourself because you know that this is your one relationship and you want to do well. You need to do well. You need to succeed to keep it going. Is there a different type of pressure for a private trainer as opposed to a public trainer?
Without knowing the public side of it, I would think that the pressure is different on a personal level, that your relationship is closer than just business. You know, you're good friends, and maybe there's more emotion tied into it, that it's, you know, it's not so much cut and dry business. Hey, I'm sorry it didn't work out, or it did work out. But, you know, when you're private, you're making all the bad phone calls to one person. But at the same time, you celebrate all the high times with one person. So you go through everything together, and that, you know, it's, I think it helps make your relationship stronger, and the good times are that much better.
Yeah, very well said. Talking with trainer Phil Bauer here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, the private trainer for Richard and Tammy Rigney's Rigney Racing. You said earlier that Richard started flavoring Fireball not too long ago. What does that mean?
So he's a flavor engineer. A flavor chemist, and they make flavors for the distilled spirits industry, some bottled waters. You know, when I first started learning about it, you're amazed at how much stuff has flavor in it, as opposed to, you know, you think something with banana in it has a banana in it. Well, shelf life and all that stuff, you have flavors. And he owns or makes a few of the ingredients in Fireball. I think they're some of the major ones. So that kind of became our celebratory drink. And the horse has been named after it and whatnot. But, you know, he's it's pretty interesting to hear him talk about it, because you never realize until your eyes are open to it. Like, wow, you know, that's got flavor in it. You do that too. That's awesome. So.
Yeah, so he's the one I need to. He's the one
from.
I need to blame for all those hangovers after a few too many Fireballs, right?
Yeah. There's been some late nights with it, but most of them were good times.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. It usually is until the next morning. There's no doubt about it. Fantastic stuff. I did not realize that was his job, and that's what he was doing. That's really neat stuff. And you mentioned the horses that have been named with Fireball in their names. Tell me about some of those.
Probably our best Fireball horse is Fireball Baby. She's a Rigney Racing bred Noble's Promise filly that has been champion 2 and 3 year old sired filly in Indiana, and still running here at 5. And, you know, she's one that you have a special place in your heart, just because she brings back so many memories, not only of her wins, but you think of nobles, and then to have a horse that you bred and kind of have a lot to do with it, it's just a little more special.
I'll bring up another horse that I'm sure is special for you, and that's Madison's Luna. Tell me a little bit more about Madison's Luna.
He, we always say that he broke our hearts. He won his first two starts, one of them being the Grade 3 Hutchinson at Gulfstream, and we thought we had one that was just going to take us there. I guess you can think maybe Derby, but it was a little late for that. And we ran him in the Derby or the Pat Day Mile, and that was just a monsoon of a day. And you put a line through that, and then you try, well, we think he's that good. You go to the Wooden Stevens, another really bad result. So you start scrambling, trying to change gears and figure out the horse. And, you know, he's still running for us. He's actually up at Saratoga, and he's run some really good races this year as an older horse, but it just, you know, he kind of leveled out, and not that he's a bad horse, but he just wasn't the one that was going to take you to the next level. And when you kind of go back and look at who you ran against and stuff like that, you can only beat who you run against, and sometimes it makes you look better than you are. But he's certainly been a horse that gave us some excitement and some disappointment. You know, it's all mixed in there, but now he's kind of back on a good series of races, and we're having fun with him. We finally found a good level, and that he's been competitive. You know, he's certainly a fun horse to be around. He's got personality, as most tappets do, and you know, I think you just never know. You know, you jump through one hoop and you jump through another, and the game gets a lot harder every hoop you jump through. And sooner or later, you have to find a level, and that's the key to a horse is having success, and us as trainers as well. You gotta win races, and to have that best shot, you need to put them in the best spot.
Yeah, it's easy to see why you'd start getting Derby fever with that horse too, because Madison's Luna broke his maiden at Tampa, came back in his second start, won the Grade 3 Hutchinson, now 2-for-2. You're thinking, okay, we may have something, and then it just doesn't materialize the way that dream looks in your head. Tell me about a horse though, Phil, that maybe went the other way, where at first you're like, I don't know, this horse can be okay, and turned out to be a lot better than expected.
You know, I think a filly we had this year, last year, is a 2-year-old. Her name's Sylvia Q. That she just, there was a lot more impressive fillies that you would breeze and get excited about, or you know, even all the way back to Ocala, you watch them gallop. You're like, oh, this horse is really nice, and you know, so we got towards the fall campaign, and it's time to get her started. So we just put her in a race and hope for the best, and she darn near won it. And then she won her next start, and she won an A other than after that. And so we tried her in the fantasy, thinking, oh, you know, you get this, start to believe. And you know, she ran fine in the fantasy, but just wasn't good enough. So she came up here and was second at Churchill in a 3-3, but she was one that most recently probably was like that. Another one is older mare. We have Singita Dreams, that she was just, you thought she was just going to be nothing and terrible numbers and stuff, but she was able to knock out a few starts, and, you know, maiden claiming and then open claiming. And the next thing you know, she's as honest as they come, and darn near winning two other thens at Churchill Downs. And you're thinking, well, maybe she deserves a shot and a little stake here or there. But, you know, horses can change year to year, and just like people, you know, it's, I think maturity sometimes is a key factor in success, and other times it's precocity. And, you know, you see horses that are really good at two that just disappear. And I think every horse has its day.
Phil Bauer here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. If you miss any portion of the show, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our Trainer Talk shows at your leisure. Phil, I assume that as part of your role as private trainer for the Rigneys, that you're the man who's going to the sales, selecting horses at the sales, and helping them pick out the right ones that you think will fit your program and your training philosophy and their ownership philosophy too. When you go to a sale, what are some of the things that you're looking for with young horses that make you know, okay, this one could be a good fit?
We actually kind of passed the baton. We picked out, I think, three or four crops on our own. And, you know, we picked the Madison Luna and we picked a few others that got you excited. But I think we had the realization together that we need somebody to take us to the next level as far as the athlete's concerned. And we'll leave them unnamed, but we're two and a half crops in, I guess you can say. The first year we only bought five, and the last two, the athletes that are just coming in the barn just make everyone's job so much easier when they have natural ability. I think lately been focusing primarily on fillies, you know, sometimes having residual value, and Richard is trying to expand his breeding program, so what better to do it with horses off the track if they're successful. But, you know, I think as far as us, we're kind of the tail end of it. We select or approve the ones we like off short list based on, you know, physicals and pedigrees for the fillies. But I think it all boils down to just athletes. I mean, you need to have the walk, the look, the presence. And nowadays, I mean, it seems like everybody's keying on a lot of the same horses just at these sales, and you're hoping to find maybe a diamond in the rough to not have to bid against everybody. But we're just at the tail end of it. We certainly have a part throughout it and voice our opinions, but I think it all kind of comes together at the end there and shortly before you head up to the ring.
Yeah, that's interesting. Interesting approach to getting the right horses into your program. And, Phil, when I use the word program, is that the right word to describe your operation? Would it be considered program, or is there something, a better word that you would use?
Yeah, I think you could say program for any outfit back there. Everybody does things a little bit different here or there. But we certainly have our ways of kind of marching forward. And, you know, we've had pretty good luck with younger horses here the last couple of years, and first-time starters and stuff firing well. But, you know, you think you got to give a lot of credit to the guys that are working for us and with the horses and the guys picking the horses. So it's definitely, it's not an individual here or there. It's a team. You're only as good as your horse and the team that you've put together to get the horse there. And it's starts at the top with Mr. Rigney, and it goes all the way down to the hot walkers. You know, it's a daily routine and 7 days a week. Everybody giving it their best, and hopefully, you know, that's kind of why winning is so contagious and good for morale, because so much work goes in, and you get beat up. I mean, you win 10 to 15 to 20% of the time, so majority of the time you're losing. So you have to rejoice with the wins and keep, let those keep moving you forward. And, you know, you certainly always have to dream in this game, because that's what it's all about. You want to play at the top. And when you get a individual that you think that you can, it's all that more exciting.
Well, Phil, we're coming into the final 16th of a mile on today's program, down to the final 3 minutes. And I always like to wrap up the show by asking trainers to let me know something about them that maybe we haven't touched on yet, other hobbies, interests, things you enjoy doing when you do get some time to be away from your operation, which I know is very rare. So what other hobbies or interests does Phil Bauer enjoy?
I would have to say, you know, I'm kind of an outdoorsman. I like Mother Nature and everything that goes along with it. It's, you know, I grew up as a kid not in the industry, so I had weekends on the lake, and lake life is great. Certainly the camaraderie of a campfire with family during hunting season is high on the list there. And, you know, just I think the way I was raised, the family's important. And anytime you can spend time with it, it's fun. And certainly Tammy and Richard are family. So it's nice to be able to train for people that you consider family. So.
Yeah. You mentioned hunting season. Deer, turkey, ducks, what do you like to hunt?
Everything. You know, as a child, I had a lot more opportunity and time to do everything, but majority it's a weekend or two here or there during Kentucky deer season. But certainly, hopefully, some other opportunities will arise. That you know, when we were at Payson, that we did some bass fishing on Okeechobee, and that was a blast, and other stuff. But anything I can do, it just depends on timing and schedule.
Well, Phil, listen, I appreciate you making some time for me on the program here today. It's been great to hear your story and your philosophies, and great to talk about your success, too. Really appreciate it. All the best moving forward. Let's keep it rolling.
Well, I thank you so much for having me on, and you know, certainly hope to speak to you sooner than later.
I'd appreciate it. Phil Bauer here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Again, if you missed any portion, go to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast and follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook and Instagram. Now for my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios, for my guest, Phil Bauer, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.